Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome back, friends. Big theory today, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, Ez, you know, I had to bring you on for this. A couple reasons. It actually really works out, right? You are, it's like your last kind of free week here before school starts, diving back in. Jimmy is off this week. And this theory is something I was thinking about, kind of typing up. And I was like, well, I have to bring Ez on because this is really kind of an extension of, like, really one of our first theories we ever did on this podcast, which is really kind of your baby. And so I have been kind of diving into it deeper more. It actually kind of happened because I've been going through all of our old docs. I still have all of them that we've created all over the years as a nice, you know, created way back in the day. And I was looking at all these theories and everything and being like, all right, let me, you know, that's a fun one to dive into. That's a fun one to dive into. And so what I ultimately came up with, which was your original theories of the possibility of Sorella Sand, Illyrus, also perhaps being Rhaenys Targaryen.
Right.
And so we'll go into that a little bit, too. And we've talked about it many times on the show. But I have one today. And I think it's going to be, I think, the actual importance of the Sphinx and Sorella Sand and Illyrus, because I think that's where, like, where does it ultimately go? And what is going to be the point purpose? Because what is she, or, you know, he, Illyrus, doing there at the Citadel? What is the purpose of that?
Right. So
here we go. Will Sorella Sand be the one to uncover Jon Snow's parentage at the Citadel? One of the biggest mysteries in A Song of Ice and Fire is the identity of the Sphinx. In his dying words, Maester Aemon urges Samwell Tarly to seek the Sphinx at Old Town. The Sphinx is the riddle. Many fans believe that the Sphinx is Illyrus, a young Dornish boy studying at the Citadel who was actually Sorella Sand, one of Oberyn Martell's Sand Snakes. In disguise. The Illyrus equals Sorella theory is one of the most widely accepted in the fandom, but it does raise a key question. Why is the Sphinx so important in the first place? What if the answer is that Illyrus is the one who uncovers Jon Snow's true parentage? In the show, Sam learns about Rhaegar and Lyanna's marriage when Gilly reads it from an old book at the Citadel. But in the books, maybe Sam learns it through Illyrus, who's been investigating the mystery as well. Sorella, being from Dorne, would have far more personal interest in the truth. She would want to know why her aunt, Elia Martell, was set aside for Lyanna Stark, and why Rhaegar sent members of the Kingsguard to protect Lyanna at the Tower of Joy instead of fighting beside him on the Trident. This revelation could have huge ripple effects in the books that the show never touched. We know Dorne will play a much bigger role in The Winds of Winter and A Dream for Spring. The show more or less abandoned the Dornish plot when it became unpopular, but George R. R. Martin has been building something much more important. If Illyrus uncovers the truth, she could use it to rally Dorne behind Daenerys instead of young Griff, knowing he's a pretender, and push Daenerys to seek out the real Targaryen heir.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Because if I can just say, what is the point? Why is the Sphinx the riddle? And we don't really know in the book series, like, how it's going to be revealed that John's true parentage. And, you know, the show shows us that. And as Matt was sort of pointing out there, it's Sam and Gilly in the Citadel. But again, the biggest player in the books there, the biggest mystery is this Sorella Sand, Illyrus Sphinx character. And so you have to ask yourself, what is George R. R. Martin going to do to reveal John's true parentage? And I feel like this answers it. This really is the biggest riddle, the biggest mystery in the book is this R plus L equals J, right? It's the whole thing. So you want to answer that riddle or that mystery, you do it through the Sphinx.
Yeah. And you and I have been kind of, I think we've been kind of surrounding this with a bunch of different ideas that I don't really see a lot of other people in the fandom talk about. Of course, you were the one who really, brought up on like those first theory, one of the first theories we ever did, which was that it might actually be Rhaenys Targaryen, because we've talked about, well, what if young Griff, you know, is the real deal, if he is Aegon Targaryen and they smuggled him out, which, you know, most people think he's a Blackfyre, he's not the real deal, but why not smuggle both kids out? Why would you leave one kid to die? Of course, you could say, well, it's the male, but what's to say they didn't split them both up? They smuggled Danny and Viserys out and got them over. And so why not do a baby swap for both of these kids. And maybe that would also be more interesting if really it's kind of a red herring where you think it's, oh, Aegon, and maybe he is the real deal and everyone thinks about it, but actually it's Rhaenys who is Illyrius and Cirella Sand, because we've gone over this before, that, you know, is about the right age, looks Dornish.
Yep.
And that was one of the things about the children. Oh, she smells Dornish, the Mad King said. The Mad King actually thought it was, you know, like not even the true Targaryen heir, going to the hair and everything, mm-hmm. because she looked Dornish.
Yeah.
So you certainly have that angle to it. But also, I for years have thought that maybe Sam will learn about John's true parentage through John Connington, because mm-hmm. as we know, one of the biggest differences between the book and the show is that in the show, Jorah Mormont is the one who comes over to the Citadel with Grayscale, runs into Sam. Sam goes into the Forbidden Section, learns about a way to learn, you know, how to remove Grayscale, and does it to Jorah Mormont. But that's really kind of it. That's then Jorah Mormont goes on his way back to Daenerys, and then Sam there then learns about it by reading in a book. Well, I think what's more likely to happen is he could run into John Connington, perform the Grayscale technique, and maybe get a piece of the puzzle, because he is sent there really to find out about the Sphinx and the riddle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In the show, it's much more about how do we defeat the White Walkers? They're the ones that are coming. And that's certainly a part of it here. But right. Maester Aemon is another huge part of this, because as his dying words, that's what he tells him to seek out. Why would he tell him to seek that out unless Maester Aemon knew? Because clearly he's in contact with somebody at the Citadel.
Right.
Clearly he knows that there is a person down there, Illyrius, who is doing something at the Citadel. And maybe he knows that she's part of it. Maybe he knows that she could have a piece of this puzzle. Maybe she has been the one in contact with Aemon, because Aemon, as we know, believes he is actually the last, if not the last Targaryen mm-hmm. who is alive. Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah. he reveals yeah. that information to Jon Snow. So maybe he's actually putting the pieces together in his head and he can't quite figure it out yet. But that's why he convinces Sam, no, you are the one who need to figure out the Sphinx. The Sphinx is the riddle. And that's like what he was working on towards the end of his life.
Well, it also makes sense that if there is another dragon still alive, and we know that the dragons are in danger because Robert Baratheon was not going to let a single one of them live, right? Even considers going across the Narrow Sea and killing Dany and slaying her unborn child and all of that. So you really can't trust a lot of people with that knowledge that there might be a survivor, that young Griff or Aegon or Rhaenys Targaryen, these two children survived. If you were going to trust someone with that information, you would trust another dragon. And that dragon is Aemon, Maester Aemon, you know, like he, again, the crown passed him over. He went to the Citadel and his younger brother, Aeg, gets the crown, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it makes sense that he would be somebody that you would trust to know a little bit about this riddle. And he's giving that information. He's in a fever kind of as well. He was going there himself. He doesn't make it. He falls ill. So he's in this fever kind of state when he tells Sam to go seek the Sphinx. And maybe he would have said more and elaborated more, but because of his condition, he really can't. And he knows it's too late. So he has to say something, and he trusts Sam well with this really big secret. Cause imagine why not say something earlier? Why not give him more information? It's dangerous. This is dangerous stuff to talk about. So that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I've even thought for years, like if there was anybody who knew about, like if Eddard Stark trusted anybody else about with Jon's parentage, it would be another dragon. It would be somebody else who is also a Targaryen who would keep that secret. And there might be a secret plot to send him to the wall with Benjen, and Benjen informs Aemon and so on. And that's a whole nother tangent. But the idea here is that a dragon would keep this secret. A Targaryen would keep secrets for other hidden Targaryens. I mean, he's almost, he's pondering the idea of the prince that was promised, thinking it was supposed to be a male, but it's really female and Dany. So he's really getting almost like his old spirit back and thinking about his Targaryen roots, and the dragons are flying again and Dany's rising and he's going to Old Town. It's just too late. He just runs out of time before he can get there and really help and support, you know, Dany, which again, why, you said he was communicating with someone in Old Town. And Marwyn the Mage is probably who he was communicating with. And Marwyn is now going to go and seek out Dany and give her some guidance, right? So
yeah. So let me pull this up. So this is, it's chapter 60 of A Game of Thrones. I forget, I don't know which exactly John chapter it is, but it's the chapter where Aemon reveals himself to Jon Snow, right? And he's, we know all those things. And he's going through the whole, like, oh, we did this and we did that. And, you know, it's pretty interesting also that when he's revealing this, he uses the word we a lot, mm-hmm. right? When he's talking, because he's talking about, like, you know, my brother died and all of these things. Then ultimately he ends up saying Aemon Targaryen. John could scarcely believe it. Once, the old man said, once. So you see, John, I do know. And knowing, I will tell you not to stay or go. You must make that choice yourself and live with it the rest of all of your days, as I have. For his voice fell to a whisper, as I have. And that's where he's, you know, my father was Maekar, the first of his name. My mm-hmm. grandfather named me for Prince Aemon, the Dragon Knight, who was his uncle. And he's going through this whole family lineage, because the whole deal is, remember, this is right when John's like, I need to go back because the war is starting.
Right.
With that Arya Stark and captured and everything. And it's actually the same chapter where he gets Longclaw.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's that piece of it, too. So he's going through this huge identity crisis in this chapter. But that information is actually pretty privileged and pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big deal. I think people skip over just how important of a deal it is, that because Robert probably would have sought him out. I mean, we see, like, you know, in the show, they hire an assassin to go kill John at the wall. And obviously some other people are nervous about it, which is why the pink letter gets set. So it's not like the Night's Watch is completely out of touch or completely out of importance by the rest of the realm. I mean, I think if they had known, hey, here's another living Targaryen, they might have tried to do something about it.
Right, which the whole thing, very interesting with Maesters, is that they dropped their last name. And so we don't really know where their allegiance would lie, because they take up sort of the collar, the Maesters chain, and they dedicate their lives to that. So Robert Baratheon, if he's as scared as he is, again, Aemon's not openly out there, but if you wanted people to rally around him, or if Daenerys gets enough support, I mean, could Aemon shift the wall? Could he shift if there's war? I mean, people start to worry and they start to think that anything could happen. And so, yeah, I mean, it is a big deal. It's a big deal that he is a Targaryen. He's the one that we kind of forget about. And he seems to know a lot. He seems to have a lot of information. He has access to the mystic arts. He's communicating with Old Town, and he knows about the riddle of the Sphinx. Right. And it's just, there's too much for this.
He's there when Bloodraven is there.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like,
Bloodraven's orchestrating everything, right?
Bloodraven goes missing. Like, he's there. Like, clearly he knows things that are happening and things that are taking place. Because who would Bloodraven confide in while he's there a lot? Probably another Targaryen, right? Especially one who has been to the Citadel and knows these secrets and, you know, magic almost, if you want, who has studied it like Bloodraven would. And he's a maester. He's the maester of the whole thing, right? I mean, he would, like, that's his whole job, is to confide in the Lord Commander, who would have been Bloodraven. So
right.
I mean, also, even if you look at these last lines too, Aemon, once the old man, you know, he talks about, like, staying or going, you must make that choice yourself, like, as I have. And what does actually Aemon do? He goes, he leaves. That is his final act. And while he's on the ship and he's dying, he's talking about possibly meeting Daenerys. The possibility to meet another Targaryen. So maybe he's there and he's thinking the Sphinx is the riddle, and, you know, it's a connection to Daenerys or something. But he's going, and he knows that Illyrus is down there doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because clearly he's the one, he sends Sam. This is what you have to figure out. So, one, how does he know? Right.
Right. How does he know that? I again think that he is trusted with privileged information. I think once Cirella Sand shows up and becomes Illyrus there, I don't know how late in the game this happens, but I think Marwyn the Mage and others communicate. I think there is some sort of communication that this Cirella Sand came there and is operating. I mean, that's also that's a big deal that Cirella Sand is there acting as a boy, becoming a maester, learning these various things. And so who told him that information? Was he in on some sort of plot? Because where are some safe places for Targaryens to go? One, as I think Eddard Stark realizes, is, like, the safest place for Jon to probably go is the wall.
Right.
And so that's one of the, they've set up all this stuff. We have all sorts of theories about Arthur Dayne and these other guys, these old Kingsguard who could still be up at the wall. And you've got Benjen. Why does Benjen go? Why is Benjen right. Stark up there? Right. And so then you've got Maester Aemon. Like, when did, I mean, again, he was there for a long time. Maester Aemon was there for a while. So that doesn't, right. but that makes sense that, like, okay, we have, you know, Bloodraven was there. Maybe we have other Targaryen supporters, like the Raven's Teeth. You have mm-hmm. other individuals who are up there that would support a Targaryen if they found out. So yeah, it makes sense you'd send them up there. So you're looking for places, safe havens for Targaryens to go across the Narrow Sea, right? So they go over to Pentos or wherever, and you have Dany and Viserys like there. We also believe that they were at one point in Dorne. Right, Lemon yeah. Gate in the whole thing. So there's another situation where the Targaryens might have sought refuge in Dorne, which makes sense back to sort of our theory, which is Rhaenys Targaryen is alive and well and did become Sirella Sand. They're born in the same year. They have the same likeness, like 280 AC, exactly. They're born exactly the same time. The bodies were so destroyed of the little children, it actually
nobody could tell, right?
They couldn't identify the bodies. Tywin was pissed. He was upset. They couldn't even really say that these were Targaryen children, and so they wrap them up. And again, that's a conspiracy. That's a freaking conspiracy. They were not Targaryen children that they killed. Why would you send one away and not the other? So the whole point is safe havens for Targaryens to go, and it seems like Dorne was the place where they sent a lot of them. So to me, this is all starting to kind of add up, and the implications for the revelation that Jon Snow is, is Rhaegar's son is huge. And if that were to come through someone like Rhaegar's daughter who figures all of this out
right.
and then can communicate some of that to Dorne, and Dorne is a big deal. They're a big, powerful kingdom. They then can make a claim. They could be a big player in this Game of Thrones, knowing that they have a true target. They know about Jon. They can support him. They also have Rhaenys Targaryen, and they could lift her up to queen, whatever they want to do with her, or support Dany and say, we have, like, she'll gain the support of Dorne pretty easily. Like, what you're kind of insinuating is that maybe young Griff might not get the support of Dorne or Arianne Martell as much as we might think that he will, right? Because
right. Yeah, because remember, then we have the whole Mummer's Dragon, beware the Mummer's Dragon, who most right. people think is young Griff. He's going to come over, and I think the most likely candidate for him to ally himself with is actually probably Sansa. And that may be a big deal, because she's kind of that one block we don't know, right?
Yeah.
Because it's such a big difference between the show and the books, because she's not the one at Winterfell marrying
Ramsay,
right? Yeah. I mean, it's actually Jane Poole, right? And who's pretending to be Arya. And so it's a totally different situation that's going up there, which basically leaves her as like a free agent compared to the show. Now, she could still take her army north to do a battle of the bastards or something when, you know, we know Jon's going to get resurrected, right? With Melisandre. So you still have that piece that's going on. But what's going to happen with Sansa? And I feel like the most likely thing is that she is probably going to, Sansa's probably going to be allied with young Griff, because Littlefinger will be sitting there and saying, hey, you know, here we go. You still actually have a dynamic, if that happens, by the way, that I don't think a lot of people really talk about, because one of the big dynamics we do see in the show, if you want to try pull something from it, and I think regardless, you're going to see a split between Sansa and Littlefinger mm-hmm. in the show, right? Like, after they deal with the Boltons, Sansa and Littlefinger have that exchange where she talks about, like, well, you were the one who sold me to Bolton, and look what he did to me. Like, he raped me. He did all of mm-hmm. these things. Now, you could still have that where Littlefinger's pushing her to go towards young Griff, and she could say, well, this guy's a Targaryen, and he burned my grandfather and my uncle at the stake, you know, or on with mm-hmm. in the throne room. Like, so you could still have that exchange
right.
with them. Like, that tension could be created by him maybe forcing her to go with a Targaryen.
Yeah.
And so a lot of those pieces that we know Dan and Dave got some stuff from George, and even still, like, there's still like a funnel where a lot of these things will be somewhat similar that you're going to get to the end, because we're just right. too far in the story for it to kind of go all over the place.
Right.
But I think, like, you'll still have that dynamic, and they've been building towards it. And George has been building towards it anyway, that split. So if that happens, if Sansa and young Griff could get together, which I think, or are maybe meant to be together, which also ties into the Sansa 5 you know, Knights of the Seven Kingdoms theory, right? All the champions, that is that the final one is still for her to be with the Targaryen. So it could be Jon, or it could be young Griff, right? So you have that piece of it too. So, well, if that happens, well, then now they're an ally. And when Dany does come over, she's going to need allies. And I think Dorne is by far the most likely one. And they could say, hey, we have all this information. So, like, there's some of the pieces that surround it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, when you get down to it, let's say, I mean, whether, and again, I'm on board with you that I do think it is Rhaenys, but either way, I think for the people who don't, still, the whole Illyrus Sorelisand is the Sphinx deal is probably sent to Old Town really by about the same time as Oberyn. Because Oberyn, right, in theory, it's his daughter, is going to King's Landing because I want to get revenge on the mountain, right? I want to get revenge on the Lannisters, and I want to get revenge on the mountain. So he's probably the one that encourages her to go to the Citadel, learn everything you can so we can like expose this whole deal. Because Oberyn believes I'm going to kill the mountain,
right?
And I'm going to expose these people for who they are. And so like he was planning on something. He didn't get to finish it, right? Because he ultimately dies. I mean, in theory, he does kind of kill the mountain, so he somewhat succeeds. But he was planning on something. So she's going there to get information. And what is that information that she's going to seek? It's clearly enough to where somebody at the Citadel, who's probably like an old timer there, contacts Maester Aemon to say, hey, there's somebody in here like digging up stuff.
Right. And they're digging up stuff on Targaryens. This might be interesting to you because this is, again, your family. And they seem very interested in, you know, maybe what happened. Maybe there's secrets of the Tower of Joy, you know, like the marriage that Sam sort of finds out about, right? Secretly. There's probably intel on Elia Martell was killed. Is there more information about her children? Was there more information as to where did Dany go first, and who was it that led them away from Dragonstone, and where did they say where were they safely stashed? Like, I feel like there probably is a lot of secret information or ravens or letters or what have you that she is going to get access to. And yeah, the big question is, like, what is her motive there? Like, what's her game, right? Like, they call it a game that she's playing, essentially. What is she trying to figure out? What is she stumbling into? Are they secrets that Aemon already knows about? And so, therefore, this is some character that's revealed herself to Marwyn the Mage and others, and this other secret society that are protecting Targaryens. Like, that's the other big question I kind of have, is like, what if you don't think that Rhaenys Targaryen survived, then she's not Sorella Sand, and she's just some bastard daughter, of like a sand snake, essentially. Then what is her significance? Purpose. Yeah, what's her significance? What's her purpose? And what is she going to do? She could just be the keys that unlock a curious individual who unlocks more about her aunt Elia Martell and learns more about her actual children and her separation or estrangement or whatever it was from Rhaegar. Maybe she stumbles on that information.
Maybe Oberyn has been putting the pieces together, because clearly he's been obsessing about this for a long time. Right. I mean, years later, he's like, I see my opportunity. I'm going to go get revenge. But she goes there, I think, to learn more than to just become a maester, because it's enough to intrigue things. Right. I mean, so clearly he wants to unlock something. And I don't know if Oberyn, I mean, maybe he did put the pieces together to say, you know, the Tower of Joy, because that's in Dorne. That's not like super far away for them. They could go investigate and see what's going on. We know that the tower was like destroyed. But, you know, I mean, the Danes are also in Dorne, and Ashara Dane and all of that stuff. So, I mean, there's enough pieces there for Oberyn to clearly be obsessing about this for a long time, to where he potentially sends his daughter or his fake daughter or whatever you want to call it, goes to the Citadel to learn and study, and is there doing something that's causing Aemon to somehow learn about this. Because my guess is also, you know, we don't really get a lot of like actual backstory on Aemon about like what happened over, you know, the years and years. But I mean, 10 years ago from the time the book started would have been, you know, been Robert's Rebellion and ish and 15, whatever years, it doesn't matter. Essentially, he's going to be there when all of these Targaryen loyalists get sent to the wall. Mm-hmm. Right. Alistair Thorne is one of them. Yeah. He's there when Alistair Thorne gets sent there. So he's sitting there watching all these new recruits come in who are Targaryen loyalists and has to sit and watch these people essentially come to prison, you know, in a way that, I mean, it is somewhat of a prison or because you get to go serve the realm, but essentially he gets to watch those people one by one file in who were probably Targaryen loyalists who chose to take the black instead of like taking death for as like war criminals or whatever you want to call it, because Robert didn't like him enough. And Alistair Thorne is one of them. And I'm sure Aemon and Alistair Thorne are somewhat buddies because, you know, I mean, they're higher up in the chain and everything. So you're saying he doesn't want to understand what's going on. He doesn't want to see what's going on to his family that's being destroyed and want to know like all these connections, right? He would have been there when Bloodraven either gets lost or maybe he's having prophetic dreams about, oh, the dragons will rise again. And, you know, we might learn more about that in the next series, right? I mean, that's one of the big deals. So there's so much that surrounds like Aemon, with like potential prophecy that he knows about, as well as like family Targaryen secrets, as well as secrets of the Citadel. And he's clearly somewhat still involved if he knows even who the Sphinx is.
Exactly. If he knows who the Sphinx is,
he clearly knows current events.
Exactly. That's the biggest mystery is like, how the heck on the way down there does he know about this? Which tips us off to think that
you know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all, and everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He's been informed. Like I was saying earlier, if you need to split up Rhaegar's children and hide them, and I keep going back to she's Rhaenys, but like Matt said, regardless, he somehow knows that that the Sphinx is active and is working and is a mystery to them at the Citadel. So how? It could be like you said. So he's been there for quite some time. It's not impossible that he does that the Maesters have some sort of conference, and he does at one point, you know, leave. Like earlier, many years earlier, maybe when all this happened, he does take a quick trip down there and he is a part of some secret. Maybe we just don't know that information yet. Marwyn the Mage could say to us easily at one point that he showed up after Robert's Rebellion and they had a meeting and they had this secret set up, or they communicated through the glass candles or whatever. There's still a lot of information that could be told to us about Aemon's backstory, if that makes sense. Right. Yeah. It's all still open to us. Just because he's died, he could have left letters. Other characters can tell us more about what he was about, what he was doing, which would make a lot more sense. And just if I can quickly, you know, oftentimes when we say this, because I've struggled with this for a little bit, when we talk about the Rhaenys Targaryen character still being alive, people will be like, well, then that means you're saying young Griff is actually a true Aegon. Not necessarily, because it's much more likely that an infant child, a baby, I forget how old he was. It was
he was like baby.
Yeah, so 2, 3, maybe, I don't even know. Not even that.
No, I think she's like 2 or, I mean, she's like a toddler, yeah, and he is a baby.
He is a baby. Yeah. So it's much more likely that an infant would not survive that journey, even if he were saved to some degree. So you still could have your whole Blackfyre conspiracy situation, and maybe that's why. Maybe Oberyn Martell and his family know more about that, if that makes sense. Like they both were sent there, or Varys took one. And again, maybe Aegon, young Griff is true. I mean, I know everyone thinks he's a false dragon and he's the Mummer's dragon and stuff like that, but you just don't,
what's to say also that Oberyn and Dorne aren't planning on propping Rhaenys up as the rightful queen, because Daenerys and Viserys are way over at Essos. I mean, you get like, you hear about, it's like rumors still. Oh, she has dragons and all of this stuff. But if you're Oberyn Martell and you're waiting for your right time, now you can go and you can kill the mountain. Because his plan was to have him say, as he's dying, yes, I'm the one who killed them.
Yeah.
In front of the court.
Right. Right.
Okay. So if his plan is, I'm going to send you secretly to the, if it is actually Rhaenys, well, now Dorne can say, okay, we actually have the real deal piece that we can prop up as our queen, because it is, would be his niece.
Yes, for sure. Yeah,
it would be his niece, and they could marry her to Dorne, or not Dorne. God, what's his name that gets killed at the Quentin?
Oh yeah.
Because it's only after everything's like broken apart, like Oberyn dies and all that, that they like, all right, we're going to send Quentin to go
plan B to go
be with Daenerys.
Right, that's a really good point. Yeah, they probably had a some sort of setup, because the Sphinx has been there for a while, learning various things and maybe acquiring secretly information. If you watch the Sand Snakes, all of Oberyn's children, they all have roles and they all seem to be very different in terms of what they're working
on. Dorne Martell may not know.
Right, that's true. That's true.
It might be something that Oberyn was keeping close to the chest.
Right, because Oberyn was very close with Elia, and they traveled together, right? They go to Casterly Rock. There's a whole backstory about them and their travels and how close they were. And that's why he's obsessed over this. And it's also someone that that she would trust to sort of take, you know, her children if you knew something was happening, if you're gonna secret them away. And there are, clearly we've seen that there, Varys knows how to, even if the city is under siege, he knows how to get people out. So it's not like it's impossible to think that didn't happen. And there's a conspiracy with all the bloody children and, you know, whatnot.
Right.
So,
and even thematically, right? Like, still go back to this whole deal, is she is at the Citadel for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of whether it is Rhaenys or not, the Sphinx is there at the thing. So my still guess is that the ultimate thing that's going to come out of this is that, and you can go either way, whether it's Rhaenys or not,
right,
is that Sam is going to figure out that John is a Targaryen, right? Because I think for a long time I thought maybe it was just going to be John Connington. Well, he goes over there and then John Connington's the one who tells him, because he's going to remove the grayscale like he does for Jorah in the show. And John Connington obviously was like Rhaegar's best friend and all of these things. So now I'm thinking more, well, you still have to have this Sphinx play a role. So my guess is that it's going to be Sam is going to run into both of them, and Sam's going to be the one to put it together. And maybe you could still have Gilly read it in a book if you want to have the fun little, like, Gilly's the one who's actually uncovers the whole deal, which is cool, which is so cool and so great. But there's also like the baby swap thing, huge difference. Yeah. That's a big piece. So, and then maybe that's also why he thinks about it. Like, that's another big thing, is Sam is actually, like, we're talking about baby swaps here. Sam quite literally has swapped babies.
I know, exactly. It's right in front of him.
He can think about, like, well, we did it. Why couldn't someone else?
Exactly.
Right? 100%. And so maybe even if it's still just him being like, oh, no, actually, it's like, we swapped it, and we're hiding the identity of this baby with little Sam. No, well, that means John. No, he puts it together. So it could also be that if Alyrus is Sirella, is actually Rhaenys Targaryen, she could go and she could uncover the truth that maybe Oberyn was really close to thinking, right? Mm-hmm. And she could say, well, you know, I mean, that would be my brother, half-brother. And boom, now we could do it this way, and we could keep the Dorne line going tied to the Targaryens, and we could be like reveal ourselves to be. And then it ties in so either way it ties in, but I think it ties in even better if she is actually Rhaenys, because a lot of people don't think that Dany and Jon are going to get together in the books.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. I think it's a long shot. I mean, it's such a long shot. It feels like they did that just because fan service or something, and they also didn't have really a clear path laid out from George yet on this. But yeah, it doesn't seem like in the books that's going to be the case at all.
Right, because Danny's gonna have to come over and deal with young Griff, and that's a different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a different scenario that's going on, because so many things that have happened in the books,
right,
like haven't necessarily happened in the other way around, right? Like, so the crazy, like the biggest difference to me is like Hardhome hasn't happened in the books yet, and Jon is already dead.
Mm-hmm.
Hardhome mm-hmm. happens before Jon dies in the show, so like that's why Hardhome happens, and he brings all the people south. I mean, they've already brought some wildlings south, but Hardhome still has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So Jon is most likely, if he does awaken, like that's why the Battle of the Bastards may happen way later.
Right.
Like, because he may say, well, like we have to go to Hardhome first. And now he can actually bring an actual like army of wildlings down. And the Night's Watch, he's already been killed. So it's not like they're going to kill him again for doing this. It's like betraying the Watch. He could just say, well, I'm doing it just because we got to do it. And then he can take that army. He might not even need the help of the Vale.
Right. Well, like you said, it does seem like his trajectory is a completely different path, a different, you know, focus than Daenerys. Daenerys is still going to play the Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah. She still has to go back to Meereen and deal with all that. And then,
right.
And then she still has to sail over. By the time she sails over in the books, other big events will have already taken place. I don't know that they're going to go. I don't know that we're going to see a, like, let's go back beyond the wall to capture a white, to get Cersei, because all that stuff with the Faith is still going on. She has to blow up the Sept of Baelor, and young Griff may like completely take it over. A lot of people think Cersei's going to flee back to Casterly Rock, and that's where Tyrion's going to kill her.
Right. Exactly. See, again, it's so different. And I love that. I actually cannot wait till we see this in Winds of Winter and it's all laid out for us. Part one of the ending of this great tale. But yeah, I do think there's going to be a lot of differences in terms of like those two getting together. If you think about it, Jon, once he's revealed as a Targaryen, he has the true claim, right? He has the true claim. The show dealt with that as well. Quite honestly, even if Rhaenys is alive, if she is really Cyrella Sand, she has a better claim than Dany, technically.
Yeah.
Being Rhaegar's daughter. And again, same if that young Griff is really Aegon, then actually he would have
the best claim over anybody.
Yeah. Over anybody.
Yeah, he has more of a claim than Jon, because he is the firstborn
son
of Aegon.
Right.
Or of,
so
Rhaegar.
Rhaegar, yeah. So, yeah. So there's a lot a lot of dynamics going on there. And again, she's built this whole host, this whole army. She has the actual dragons. So that's interesting, is that she has the dragons. These guys are dragonless. And then she's coming in. Well, she now has other Targaryens that she can choose from that could ally themselves with her. And then she makes her claim. That's where we might get into some sort of, you know, touchiness in terms of like, if she does ally with young Griff, or if this Rhaenys character is alive, or even Jon, like how does that all play out? Who actually takes the throne? Is that going to be the show did well in terms of talking about that, and some of the, how the people, she's not from Westeros and she didn't live there. She didn't grow up there. And so you're going to have Jon and the likes of,
right,
of even like a Rhaenys or somebody having more connection to Westeros than she does. But yeah, dude, I think you're spot on in terms of just the Sphinx is going to be central to the revelation of all of Jon Snow's, all the mysteries. Everything's going to kind of unravel. Documents will be found, and she'll have a huge piece of the pie to sort of give to the realm, to give to Sam and to other maesters, that she can kind of secret out information, because the realm has to get used to this idea. They have to start to, you know, other leaders need to understand, like, because just because you say it, just because one person says it in the Citadel, and then we, the audience and reader, know,
other people have to see
the kingdoms don't know, that they have no clue,
right? So and yeah, the other biggest difference is we know for a fact that the showrunners basically completely abandoned Dorne because it was like the first time they ever saw a ratings drop.
Yeah.
Ever. I mean, pretty much ever. It's like, and the show continued to go on after. They're like, all right, we'll start scrapping Dorne stuff. We'll just wrap this up, and because people didn't like it as much. And so we know in the books that's not the case. Is he's been building towards a big deal with Dorne, and we don't know what that's ultimately going to be. It's going to be, I think Dorne is going to be a far more valuable ally, most likely to Daenerys than anybody else. I mean, they're already trying with Quentin. And when they find out Quentin dies, trying to go get with Daenerys, who knows what happens then?
I know that's actually a really big deal. So like in the Winds of Winter preview chapters, Arianna Martell she's trying to court essentially young Griff, right? She's headed there. She's on her way. So he was setting up two avenues. One's going to go after Daenerys. Then his daughter's going to, Quentin goes after Daenerys. Arianna is going to go after this young Griff. But so you can see them making moves and making these big plays. And they've been waiting. Dorne Martell has been waiting for years to make some move. He's a snake in the grass that's been waiting, laying a trap. Think about the history of Dorne. They've never really come out of the south and gone up and just...
They're kind of like the Starks in the other way, where it's like when you go north, bad stuff happens.
Right, right. And so you don't mess with the south. I mean, for years, the Targaryens had trouble with them. That's actually why we have this big alliance, this marriage alliance, the Dragon Knight story and everything, where we finally got better relationships with Dorne because they would not kneel, right? They would not bend the knee. And they're going to play a big part in supporting. They hate the Lannisters, hate them. And so if they can root them out and they can get behind young Griff or whoever else, and they can seize control, it would throw everything into sort of some chaos, really, because they've largely just been isolated they're kind of foreign almost in terms of Westeros. They're the one kingdom besides, like you said, the North, that really is just on their own. And they're not really interacting much. They're kind of secret in that way, but they're definitely strong. And they definitely have resources, and they've not been hurt by the war, right? They've not actually been up fighting in all of these other battles. And stuff.
So their strength compared to the rest of the realm, who's been completely ravaged by war since the end of Game of Thrones.
Right.
I mean, everybody, I mean, the Greyjoys, they've lost Balin, and Euron's out there doing stuff, and they tried to take, Theon used men to try to take Winterfell. I mean, the Reach is also a little somewhat untouched. They haven't had it, but they're losing. They're probably about to lose Margaery and everything because they'll probably go down a similar route with Seth Baelor blowing up. But I mean, obviously the Riverlands is totally gassed. The North has suffered tons of damage, and I mean, the Vale a little bit, it's had some battles here and there, but they seem weak, and they're totally redefining themselves now that Sansa and Baelish are there kind of taking it over. But yeah, I mean, King's Landing and the Crown Lands and everything, it's all so war ravaged. And they're also dealing with the faith, right? Like they got to put down an entire other rebellion. And then Dorne is sitting there gathering strength, and Daenerys is probably going to go over there, ally with them, and then go forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many dynamics that were, they just could not get to it. They didn't have enough information about it. They didn't even touch this piece in the show. And we can clearly see at the end of A Dance with Dragons that this is where everything is set up. Everything is moving towards these types of conflicts. And like you were mentioning Sansa and the Vale, and they have a little bit of strength, right? They've largely been, like secluded. And then you've got the dynamic of like, does she get proposed to with another Targaryen, and does that work? Does Arianne Martell get there? There's a lot of drama.
What's to say the three heads of the dragon won't be Jon, Alyrus, who is the Sphinx, who is the riddle, who could actually be Rhaenys Targaryen, and Daenerys?
Yeah, oh no, for sure. It for sure could be. And that's what I think is so
crazy. Because that would then actually be three actual dragons, as opposed to like young Griff, who is a Blackfyre pretender, or may just not, he may not even be a Blackfyre pretender. Some people think he might just be the son of Illyrio.
Right, for sure, he could be. So he's just... if they deal with that, and then, because it would be really cool. You want to have three heads of the dragon. You want to have these Targaryens riding again. It makes sense. We see in the House of the Dragon that you have to sort of have some of that dragon's blood, that Targaryen blood, to sort of command dragons, right? Yeah. And by the way, the whole ice dragon situation, I think there is an actual ice dragon. It's different.
Totally, yeah.
It's different. Totally. It's not going to be like, we're not going to take one of them out.
By the way, we can close up shop here. I do have some other theories I've been working on that are pretty crazy, and I've been seeing some stuff just like, you know, trying to find some of these like cringe theory, like not, I should say fringe theories, not cringe theories. Yeah. You don't want any cringe ones. But I've seen people argue, because I did one a while back about like the possibility of Mance Rayder and Craster being like brothers, because if you look at their backstory, it's like identical. They're both of them, their father was a member of the Night's Watch, and they both have mothers who were just wildlings. And now I've been diving into it, and I've been reading much more about Craster and like his, like, just if you really look at some of the terminology he uses and stuff like that, I mean, there are people out there that think that Craster might actually be the son of Bloodraven, because the timeline somewhat works out, like, because he's pretty old. We don't know exactly how old he is, but, you know, he's probably in his 50s or something like that. Like, he's older in the Song of Ice and Fire universe. And he talks about, you know, how, like, the gods protect him, and how he's like, when Jor Mormont is there and he's talking about, you know, like, oh, winter's coming. He's like, don't worry, my roots are deep. Like, and he uses that line. It's like, wait, my roots are deep. Oh, and I think of the tree, dude. And the weird. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay, just, I know we're wrapping up shop, but I just very quickly, I've actually on the side been rereading and looking at some of the Song of Ice and Fire 2, and I, along those same lines, I've been thinking, you know how you and I back in the day we used to go back the ravens and the crows and all the blood raven stuff. I'm telling you, that fits up exactly with what I've been rereading Bran, and essentially at no point in my reread, I'm just doing a point of view reread. At no point does Bran or the Three-Eyed Crow ever say they should go north. It never happens. It's Jojen who's misled and who is being drug along. We don't even know that the Three-Eyed Crow literally is not in the north. It is Bloodraven, as you said. The roots run deep, right, from the earth, power, right, and so wisdom, power, whatever. It's literally all, everything that's happening with Bloodraven up there beyond the wall is key to everything. I have a theory, and maybe we'll, if you want to come back and we'll do this, but I have a theory that the Three-Eyed Crow, and I think people have seen this or heard this or read this. I was doing some digging, but I now believe it. I believe that Bran is the Three-Eyed Crow and his future Bran. And when you go back through that lens and you start to read again, and you think, dang, Jojen is so far off in terms of how he leads Bran and guides him in this. And there's so many little words. I'll have to bring it to you. We'll do it. We'll do a theory where it literally says multiple times that like Bran is constantly questioning like Jojen and all this stuff. And so it actually lines up with like, who is the last Green Seer? Why does Bloodraven say that he's not the Three-Eyed Crow? And then you look at what the show told us. Literally the show told us that the Children of the Forest created the others. And who, Craster, as you said, who's Bloodraven surrounded by? The Children of the Forest. And if Craster was his son, then he's feeding the others, which are the creation of the children. Did the children go too far? Are they happy with their creation? Right. What's the whole deal? So it's there's so I'll tell you why Winds of Winter is so hard to write, because it all sounds great. And it all could work. It's all there. So.
Well, and even real quick on that, we'll close up shop here. But the, Craster, like, let's say he is actually, just for sake of argument, for funsies here, is like son of Bloodraven. Because you look at the timeline. I mean, Bloodraven goes to the wall, and I think in like 220 or something like that, he goes missing around like 250. So kind of depends on just how old Craster is. Certainly could be his grandson, but it's just kind of like, it's, I just find it really interesting that both Mance Rayder and Craster are because that's, I did a theory about, are they brothers, because they have the same, like, their story is the same. They both of their dads were members of the Night's Watch who hooked up with wildlings. Mm-hmm. Right. And they don't like each other. Craster does not like Mance Rayder whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting, because if Craster does have, like, he could actually also be somebody who is quite literally of ice and fire. He could have the blood of the first men and have Targaryen Greenseer blood if he is whatever. And mm-hmm. so if he's the one who's giving his children to the others and they're turning them into White Walkers, now that's maybe why they have accumulated perhaps enough magical blood to be like, oh, we can go, it's time for us to ride.
Right. Yeah. No, that does. I mean, Craster's always been he's one of those characters that's kind of overlooked. You think he's just this nasty dude and you meet him on the way up there, but like he's connected to all of this. He's literally giving sacrifices, giving his children over to the others. And I think we need to look at that. Yeah, you're right. We need to look at that character more. Gurren wants you to gloss over him and not think too much about him, but then bury those clues in there that connect him to Mance, which is interesting. I have to go back and listen to you talk about that. And then, you know, the connection to Bloodraven, I freaking love that. Because what's he doing? Who's the good guys here, man? That's the other big thing. Because in my theory with Rand, Brand being a three-eyed crow, he's evil. He's an evil Brand, an evil version of Brand. But then in this, is Bloodraven good? Is this for the realm? Because he's been kind of murky. He's a murky character that kind of, is he doing things the right way? Is he not? Did he make a sacrifice? Did he let himself be tied into the tree for the rest of his life? Like, what's the freaking deal? And it's just, there's so many freaking questions. And you could still theorize for days about this series until Winds of Winter comes out, because that's why George is having so much of a hard time. It's not just a Myrinese knot that he had down there. People talk about that knot that he had with Dany and all this stuff going on. No. There are knots everywhere, my friends. There's literally, it's vines that have just grown everywhere. Oh, yeah. He's got all sorts of paths that he could take that he's like, I actually want to do an execution.
What's crazy is that it quite literally is. So Jimmy and I looked this up the other day because we were talking about like weirwood trees and whatnot. And the weirwood tree is actually based off of this tree in Utah. I forget what it's called. I forget its actual name, but it has some name. It's like Plute or something like that, where it is actually like the largest actual tree in the world because its root system is so big that it spreads over like miles, but it's like still one tree. That's like what the weirwoods are based off of. Yeah,
dude, that's actually pretty sick. That's pretty sick.
It's like in Utah, I think. Yeah,
and see, that makes you think. Yeah, like they say in the legends that a lot of the weirwood trees were cut down in the south, and so their power has kind of receded from there.
Pando, Pando is what it's called, and it's an actual tree, and it is in Utah, and it has 47,000 stems. Yeah, and it's like it's this huge, huge tree, but it's one tree, but it's like it's
basically, but it's all spread out and connected. Yeah. Dude, that's actually awesome. That makes a lot of sense too, because that's like, how does there, if you're connected into the weirwood network, like where does that stretch? You know, how far does that reach? And is that the limit to their power? And is the vision from the three-eyed crow, is that beyond? You know that? I would challenge people to go back and look like the difference between the powers there in terms of what a green seer or someone tied into the weirwood network like Bloodraven, how different that is from just third eye sight and general sight. Because the first, where Bran is flying and he gets his sight, he can see everywhere. It's not, he's not bound to the weirwood network. Yeah. So it's a lot, man. There's a lot that people can still dive into.
That's why we love it.
It's why we love it, dude. It's why we love it. As you said, roots, I was like, oh, God, dude.
All right. Hey, Ez, where can people find you on the internet these days, my friend?
Yeah, hey, you can find me at The Flannel Wizard over on YouTube. Matt and I have also been doing some podcasts where we're going to hop off here and talk Star Wars in a second. We've been posting that on our various feeds. So I got a podcast feed, The Flannel Wizard. You can find that on anywhere you find podcasts. Then over just on YouTube, find me, just type in The Flannel Wizard, and you'll see me over there. Doing some a lot of Harry Potter, Star Wars, working in some Lord of the Rings stuff, DC stuff. So we'll see where we go from there. But yeah, it's great. So glad to be back here.
Yeah. All right. Well, guys, as always, thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, Jimmy and I will be back discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 60, Tyrion 8, otherwise known as the Purple Wedding. Big one that we are about to hit. So if you like our podcast, be sure to Don't forget to hit subscribe, like us, write a review, leave us a comment, send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com. We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.